Hey everybody, today we are bringing you a very important interview and demo with Craig Mundy, the Chief Research and Strategy Officer here at Microsoft. Now some people have sort of defined that role as a visionary into what Microsoft Research is going to be doing for the upcoming years. Can you sort of shed a little light and expand on that?
Well, partly what I do is oversee the research activities globally. And in that environment, we try to look out as much as 15 and 20 years into the future from a pure technology point of view. What I've done with some of the demos we'll show today is to try to bring that back in and help people understand what we really might do with it in the next, say, 5 years.
Okay, now you mentioned the demo. So this is something that you've been sort of doing in colleges and universities nationwide for the past several months. And what was your goal with the demos?
Well, each year I try to go visit some universities. And so this year we visited four across the country. And to show demos to the students and faculty to help them understand how technology is going to change the world in some sense, and
right.
to some extent also change the way that they actually deal with computers themselves.
So you must have partnered closely with our research university in Cambridge?
Cambridge is clearly one of the labs.
Yeah.
These demos were all given in the U.S., it turned out, but one of the first demos is built on some technology that came out of the Cambridge lab.
Right on, I would think so. And what was the response? Were people sort of blown away? Obviously, the students excited?
Yeah, I think it was really quite a very positive reaction. That, you know, most of the time, you know, the kids today in school, they have their laptops or their smartphones, and they live in that environment. But many of them are studying science and engineering. Many of them are really interested in some of the societal challenges we have, like global warming.
Yeah, I mean, these are huge topics. Education, health.
Right. So in the demos we chose this year, we tried to pick some of these hot topics, global warming being one, and then show how these new computer technologies will allow them in the future to be part of solving these problems.
Awesome. Well, let's get right to it. Let's take a look at the demos.
Okay. So this first demo we developed because today global warming is a hot topic. People
Absolutely.
Are trying to figure out what to do. There's a lot of policy issues that are going on. And it's very difficult when you think about the time scale of like 50 or 100 years and you're trying to make policy choices today. You know, how do you figure these things out?
Mm-hmm.
And so the Microsoft research people in Cambridge in the UK have come up with a tool bench, a computational science laboratory, to allow people to start to build much more sophisticated models than they would have been able to do in the past. So if you look at this, the way that they can do this now is a bit more like, you know, stitching things together diagrammatically as opposed to sitting down and writing thousands and thousands of line of code.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have databases that other people have produced. They're available through the internet. We have different types of software, and we basically are going to put together a model that will predict, in this case, what will happen to the global temperatures as a function of how many trees get cut down in the Amazon. Because that's one of the big policy questions, is do you pay to not cut down the trees? And so the way that this works is a bit like taking a visual programming system,
okay,
where each of these modules and all of their connections represent either the data or the kind of computer programs that you might want to assemble together, and you wire this model up. And so this allows a scientist who understands the physics, you know, to build their own application. Whereas in the past, you would have had to have someone understood the physics, explain to someone who was a programmer, you know, how to write the code. And that is a very long and arduous process. So the way this system works now with this toolkit is we have a map. We've got a scale that allows us to plug in what rate the trees are going to get cut down from, you know, 0% to 3% a year. And if we start to run the model, you'll start to see that it starts to compute year by year, and this is going to be up to a 100-year-long run, what's going to happen. So I can take this thing and I can drag it out, say, to 50 or 60 years. And you can start to see as you get out here in time, at 0.7%, which is about the rate today, you can see that comparatively, compared to the year 2000, mm-hmm, the middle of the United States is maybe 5 degrees C warmer in its average annual temperature. This could be a real problem for crops and
Absolutely.
Water supply. And the question is, well, what happens if we could make that go to zero? And so if you slide this back, you can see that North America stays a lot greener. And in fact, only the Southwest in the United States tends to start to get a little warmer. On the other hand, if you let development go crazy in the Amazon, you can see that you know, this 5-degree thing will be all the way up into the middle of Canada.
Wow. Now, is this retroactive as well? Can you see how it's worked in previous
years? No, in fact, the way they make these models is that they look at what actually did happen.
Right.
And from that, they derive what, you know, the carbon and the atmosphere changes do. And from that, we have a model that forecasts what will happen. And from a policy point of view, that's more interesting. Other things that they did is they built a model of how the forest actually grows. In the past, because it was difficult to do, people would build these models and they just assumed forests were a constant. But we actually know forests live and die. And over a period of 100 years, trees grow and they sequester more carbon. And at the end, they actually dump it out because they die and they decompose. And they wanted to understand how would that affect things. So here they came up with a much more sophisticated model of the trees. And just like in the climate case, we can run the tree model. And you can see as the years go by, you know, the canopy grows and shrinks and the different kinds of trees grow in there. And each of these has a change in that period of time as to how much carbon is sequestered by the forest. And so that allowed them to then build a comparative model where as the runs go on, you can actually see in each state and each region in Brazil between the simple model of the forest and the more complex model of the forest, you know, how does that actually affect the temperature change and the amount of carbon that was sequestered there? And you can see that it basically does a better job with the more sophisticated model. So again, this would inform a policy person's decision making and make a decision on, you know, how much money should you spend to save the Amazon.
Absolutely. I mean, this almost is essentially proving the theory of global warming.
Well, it says yes if, you know, it shows how coupled things are. I mean, this isn't trying to model the whole globe. It's only trying
right.
to understand one thing.
But
it shows that the rainforest in the Amazon could, in fact, have a big effect on, you know, the wheat fields in Kansas.
Absolutely.
And people don't usually understand how directly connected these are. And so giving people powerful computational tools and modeling tools gives us a real leg up in trying to understand that.
Absolutely. Awesome. All right, Craig, that was absolutely fascinating. Now, I think you've got something here based on search, am I correct?
Well, actually, what I want to talk about is the concept of natural user interface.
Okay.
The next big thing in computing, I think, is going to be that people are going to be able to deal with computers using other than the mouse and keyboard.
Absolutely.
We've talked about this for a long time, handwriting recognition and now touch and things like Surface and on your phones and now on the Windows 7 PCs. But you know, we really think it's going to come to a much, much higher level where using vision and microphones as well as touch and ink and other things, the computer is going to be a lot more like dealing with a person and a lot less like typing and pointing and clicking with your mouse. So in the demo I want to show you here, which deals with the natural user interface, there's a number of things. So here we have little icons that for this demo are showing whether it's listening to me, whether it's looking at me, you know, whether it's actually tracking my gaze. And all of these are going to be integrated together in various ways in this particular demonstration. So let's pretend that I'm a scientist now and I'm doing work in zero carbon energy sources.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to start and you know, kind of do a web search, but I want to do a new one. So I'm going to start and write, you know, zero carbon here. And you can see that I didn't even get to finish writing
right.
it, and
it
sort of
you.
Finished my sentence
yeah.
for me. And so, yeah, okay, that is, in
just
fact,
like my boyfriend.
You know, what I was looking for was zero carbon energy. And I'll just put a little symbol on here to say that I wanted to search. So now it goes out to the Internet, and it gets me all kinds of data related to zero carbon energy sources.
Wow.
But, man, that's a lot of web pages.
That's a big visual search right there.
Yep, and so I'll say, well, that's not too helpful. So I'll say, computer, organize it for me. And so now it clusters the things, in this case, publications, places, research, news, my friends and colleagues. But you know, what I'm interested in is actually the research papers. So I'll say, computer, zoom in to research. So here, you know, we'll basically get into this thing a little more. Now the camera's going to be used to do eye tracking. And so as I just start to look at different places on
get
the screen,
out of here.
It pops open those little web pages according to where I look. And I can read this and say, okay, that's an interesting update. What I really want to do now is go back and look at the energy blog that I read, particularly about nuclear power, because that's what I'm really focused on in this case, is nuclear going to be a way to get zero carbon energy?
Mm-hmm.
So now I can essentially, you know, go looking around, you know, zooming around at, you know, wherever I want here, and I can end up here and say, okay, yeah, this is the one I want. This is my zero carbon news energy blog. And here there's a featured publication in this Nuclear Research Review called The Innovators. And This one is of particular interest to me because when I look at it, there's a story here about traveling wave reactors. And I'm particularly interested in this because my friends, Nathan Myhrvold and Bill Gates, some ex-Microsoft people, are actually funding the development of this new type of nuclear reactor. So they gave me some of the background material so that I could explain a little bit to people about that. So here, let's zoom in and look at this. So here, this small company called TerraPower now in Seattle is actually exploring a new type of reactor. And what's cool about it is it burns the existing waste from current nuclear fuel systems and makes power out of it. Mm-hmm. And so it solves both the waste disposal problem that the world kind of faces today from nuclear power, and it produces a much more efficient use of that. So John Gillen is the CEO, and here I'll play a little video that was embedded in this thing so that people can listen to what John had to say.
We believe we've developed a new type of nuclear reactor that can represent a nearly infinite supply of low-cost energy, carbon-free energy for the world. One can visualize our reactor by assuming there is a cylinder, some, for example, 60 centimeters long. A small amount of enriched uranium is used to launch a wave. After that, the reactor makes and consumes its own fuel without the need of refueling or removing waste from the reactor for the entire life of the reactor.
So as you can see in this video, this is very cool because
Absolutely.
It could provide the world with a huge supply of zero carbon energy. And it's all based on essentially new work that's being done here, in fact, in Seattle and around the world, using many of these new computational modeling technologies. So the ability to couple together this natural user interaction model, voice, where I ask the computer to help mm-hmm. me, it does things on my behalf, gives me scientific modeling capability. All of this is a kind of a new way to think about doing science. And again, just like in the case of the global warming problem, this is just another component of that, which is how do we get a lot of power for a lot of people without a lot of carbon.
Absolutely. I mean, I can see obviously the benefits of handing it into these up-and-coming engineers and universities and stuff. When do you think something like this will be available in our homes? The technology behind it, I'm talking about.
Well, I don't think this isn't a proposal to have personal nuclear power plants.
But, I'm more excited by the retinal scan and the voice recognition.
Well, I think you start to see this already coming today. The technology we announced earlier or last year, Project Natal for Xbox, is taking one form of the cameras. Here, you know, we've got a couple of more traditional video cameras, and it's really the integration of those and the microphones that relate to them that give us the ability to start doing these kind of gesture-based capabilities or speech-based interaction with the machine. So I think you'll see this more and more in the next few years.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that. Now I think you've got one more, and this one's going to really blow your mind, so let's hit that one.
Okay. Again, this is another one where we chose a science field and an engineering practice to try to show how natural user interface might work. So this one is actually, you know, moving to wind energy and looking at someone who's in the business of trying to design and optimize a wind turbine.
Okay.
So here what we've got is essentially a demo of a simulation on the top of a mountain down in California where we took the maps out of Bing Maps and then we put these wind turbines on there as computer models.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're really trying to do is, having looked at the airflow across these, we realize we're not getting optimal power out. And what we want to do is look at that. So here I'm going to use these flow models on, and you can actually see as the wind comes in that's been recorded,
mm-hmm.
How does it affect the individual blades. And what I really want to do is essentially take one of these things and look as a function of the simulation, you know, how much power output did I get.
So this is how it is currently.
This is how people are working on it today.
Right.
And the question is, if you want to do optimization, is there a way to couple yourself in a natural user interface way into these simulations and
right.
sort of use your brain in addition to the computer modeling to do that? So I'll show you a little bit about how that is going to happen. So if I essentially take and lay this tablet down, so now I've got essentially a surface computer.
Okay.
What I've got is a new kind of display technology. And actually, I want to take this model and flip it up onto the screen. And so now I've got that individual turbine, and I want to do more modeling around that. So the first thing I want to do is to tilt it up so I can look at it face on. So here I'm going to use cameras and gestures like we would in the Natal Xbox kind of environment, but here I'm going to use it to control this model. So here I'm going to basically kind of tilt that thing back up a little bit so that I can look at that blade.
Okay.
And now I really want to zoom in on that one blade, so I'm going to use a little zoom gesture and essentially spread that thing out so that I can see that whole blade. And now I can watch the computer's animation of the wind pattern across that blade. So here you can see that part of it's green, part of it's red. And really, in a perfect world, you'd get real laminar flow and you wouldn't have a red component. And so our goal is to try to figure out how to improve that. So as an engineer, I might essentially take this model of the camber of this blade. It was built with a 4.1 degree camber, and I'll cross that out and write 10 degrees. And so the computer model will essentially take that 10 degree thing, put it in there, and actually it'll bend the blade around, you know, to change the angle of attack.
10 degrees. Still getting some red.
So it's not, it's better, but it's not as good as I want to do. So the thing that's so great about the human brain is its ability to see and to reason about things. And so here I've got a model, and rather than just guess what, you know, should it be 10, should it be 20, should it be 3.5, let's find it by essentially coupling ourselves directly into the model. So I'm going to use essentially another set of gestures, and I'm going to use the camera to essentially grab the blade and start to change its shape. And I went too far.
Wrong way.
So now basically let's push it back down a little bit until we get it down to where it looks mostly green. So there, that looks pretty green. And so now what I was able to do is essentially use the model and the projection and my own ability to decide what was good and what wasn't good and whether it was in an optimal place instead of having to do some parametric search by, you know, repeated computer models. So this ability to do visualization, couple it into simulation, and be able to have direct, natural human interaction with it, all is a way of improving the productivity of scientists in the future. And hopefully we'll end up with even more productive wind turbines.
Absolutely. You know, if I had known that this technology existed or was going to exist, I might have become an engineer.
Well, that's good. Maybe there's still time.
Maybe there is. You never know. All right. I want to thank you so much for your time. Craig Lindy, everybody. And we'll send you, there'll be links to all these videos in the text write-up. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.